All at once, Gaylet noticed how tired Utha Calding looked. The Tim's usually expressive tendrils lay flat, and his eyes were set close together. It was with obvious effort that he stepped forward and offered a small black cube.
"Here are the references," he began.
A robot came forward and plucked the data out of his hand. From that instant, the Institute staff would be inspecting the citations. The examiner herself listened attentively to Utha Calding.
"The references will show that very early in galactic history, uplift ceremonies evolved out of the progenitors' desire to protect themselves from moral fault. They who began the process we now know as uplift frequently consulted with their client races, as humans do with theirs today, and the client's representatives were never imposed upon them."
Utha Calding gestured toward the assembled Chims.
"Strictly speaking, the ceremonial sponsors are making a suggestion when they make their selection. The clients, having passed all the tests appropriate to their stage, are legally permitted to ignore the choice. In the purest sense, this plateau is their territory. We are here as their guests."
Gaylet saw that the galactic observers were agitated. Many consulted their own data wells, accessing the precedents Utha Calding had provided. Polylingual chatter spread around the periphery. A new floater arrived, carrying several Gubru and a portable communications unit. Obviously, the invaders were doing furious research of their own. All this time, the power of the hyperspace shunt could be felt building just upslope. The low rumbling was now omnipresent, making Gaylet's tendons quiver in imposed rhythm. The Grand Examiner turned to the nominal human official, Cordwainer Appleby.
"In the name of your clan, do you support this request for a departure from normal procedure?"
Appleby bit his lower lip. He looked at Utha Calding, then at Fibbon, then back at the Timbrimi ambassador. Then, for the first time, the man actually smiled.
"Hell yes, I sure do," he said in Anglic.
Then he blushed and switched to carefully phrased Galactic Seven.
"In the name of my clan, I support Ambassador Utha Calding's request."
The examiner turned away to hear a report from her staff. When she came back, the entire hillside was hushed. Suspense held them all riveted, until she bowed to Fibbon.
"Precedent is, indeed, interpretable in favor of your request. Shall I ask your comrades to indicate their choice by hand or by secret ballot?"
"Right," came an Anglic whisper.
The young human who had accompanied Utha Calding grinned and gave Fibbon a thumbs-up sign. Fortunately, none of the Galactics were looking that way to witness the impertinence. Fibbon forced a serious expression and bowed again.
"Oh, a hand vote will do nicely, Your Honor. Thank you."
Gaylet was more bemused than anything as the election was held. She tried hard to decline her own nomination, but the same captation, the same implacable force that had kept her from speaking earlier, made her unable to withdraw her name. She was chosen unanimously. The contest for male representative was straightforward as well. Fibbon faced Iron Grip, looking calmly up into the tall probationer's fierce eyes. Gaylet found that the best she could make herself do was abstain, causing several of the others to look at her in surprise. Nevertheless, she almost sobbed with relief when the poll came in 9-3 in favor of Fibbon Bolger. When he finally approached, Galet sagged into his arms and sobbed.
"There, there," he said.
And it wasn't so much the cliché as the sound of his voice that comforted her.
"I told you I'd come back, didn't I?"
She sniffed and rubbed away tears as she nodded. One cliché deserved another. She touched his cheek, and her voice was only slightly sardonic as she said,
"My hero."
The other Chims, all except the outnumbered Probies, gathered around, pressing close in a jubilant mass. For the first time, it began to look as if the ceremony just might turn into a celebration after all. They formed ranks, two by two, behind Fibbon and Galet, and started forth along the final path toward the pinnacle, where quite soon there would be a physical link from this world to spaces far, far away. That was when a shrill whistle echoed over the small plateau. A new hover car landed in front of the Chims, blocking their path.
"Oh, no,"
Fibbon groaned, for he instantly recognized the barge carrying the three suzerains of the Gubru invasion force. The suzerain of propriety looked dejected. It drooped on its perch, unable to lift its head, even to look down at them. The other two rulers, however, hopped nimbly onto the ground and tersely addressed the examiner.
"We, as well, wish to present, offer, bring forward, a precedent."
Chapter 91 Fibbon. How easily is defeat snatched from the jaws of victory? Fibbon wondered about that as he stripped out of his formal robe and allowed two of the Chims to rub oil into his shoulders. He stretched and tried to hope that he would remember enough from his old wrestling days to make a difference.
"I'm too old for this," he thought. "And it's been a long, hard day."
The Gubru hadn't been kidding when they gleefully announced that they had found an out. Galet tried to explain it to him while he got ready. As usual, it all seemed to have to do with an abstraction.
"As I see it, Fibbon, the Galactics don't reject the idea of evolution itself, just evolution of intelligence. They believe in something like what we used to call Darwinism for creatures all the way up to pre-sentience. What's more, it's assumed that nature is wise in the way she forces every species to demonstrate its fitness in the wild."
Fibbon sighed.
"Please, get to the point, Galet. Just tell me why I have to go face to face against that momser. Isn't trial by combat pretty silly even by E.T. standards?"
She shook her head. For a little while, she had seemed to suffer from speech lock, but that had disappeared as her mind slipped into the familiar pedantic mode.
"No, it isn't. Not if you look at it carefully. You see, one of the risks a patron race runs in uplifting a new client species all the way to starfaring intelligence is that by meddling too much, it may deprive the client of its essence, of the very fitness that made it a candidate for uplift in the first place."
"You mean..."
"I mean that the Gubru can accuse humans of doing this to Chims, and the only way to disprove it is by showing that we can still be passionate and tough and physically strong."
"But I thought all those tests..." Galet shook her head.
"They showed that everyone on this plateau meets the criteria for stage three. Even..."
Galet grimaced as she seemed to have to fight for the words.
"Even those Probies are superior, at least in most of the ways Institute regulations test for. They're only deficient by our own quaint Earth standards."
"Such as decency and body odor, yeah. But I still don't get..."
"Fibbon, the Institute really doesn't care who actually steps into the shunt, not once we've passed all its tests. If the Gubru want our male race representative to prove he's better by one more criterion, that of fitness, well, it's precedented all right. In fact, it's been done more often than voting.
Across the small clearing, Iron Grip flexed and grinned back at Fibbon. Backed up by his two confederates, Weasel and Steelbar joked with the powerful probationer chief, laughing confidently over this sudden swerve in their favor. Now it was Fibbon's turn to shake his head and mutter lowly.
Goodall, what a way to run a galaxy. Maybe Pratha Chilthorn was right after all.
What was that, Fibbon?
Nothing,
he said, as he saw the referee, a Pila Institute official, approach the center of the ring. Fibbon turned to meet Galet's eyes.
Just tell me you'll marry me if I win.
But...
she blinked, then nodded. Galet seemed about to say something else, but that look came over her again, as if she simply could not find the phrases. She shivered, and in a strange, distant voice, she managed to choke out five words.
Kill him for me, Fibbon.
It was not feral bloodlust, that look in her eyes, but something much deeper. Desperation. Fibbon nodded. He suffered no illusions over what Iron Grip intended for him. The referee called them forward. There would be no weapons, there would be no rules. Underground, the rumbling had turned into a hard, angry growl, and the zone of non-space overhead flickered at the edges, as if with deadly lightning. It began with a slow circling, as Fibbon and his opponent faced each other warily, sidestepping a complete circuit of the arena. Nine of the other Chims stood on the upslope side, alongside Uther Kalving and Kalt and Robert Oneagle. Opposite them, the Gubru and Iron Grip's two compatriots watched. The various galactic observers and officials of the Uplift Institute took up the intervening arcs. Weasel and Steelbar made fist signs to their leader and bared their teeth.
"Go get 'em, Fibbon!"
one of the other Chims urged. All of the ornate ritual, all of the arcane and ancient tradition and science had come to this, then. This was the way Mother Nature finally got to cast the tie-breaking vote.
Begin!
The Pila referee's sudden shout struck Fibbon's ears as an ultrasonic squeal, an instant before the vodor boomed. Iron Grip was quick. He charged straight ahead, and Fibbon almost decided too late that the maneuver was a feint. He started to dodge to the left, and at barely the last moment changed directions, striking out with his trailing foot. The blow did not finish in the satisfying crunch he'd hoped for. But Iron Grip did cry out and reel away, holding his ribs. Unfortunately, Fibbon was thrown off balance and could not follow up his brief opportunity. In seconds it was gone, as Iron Grip moved forward again, more warily this time, with murder written in his eyes.
Some days it just doesn't pay to get out of bed,
Fibbon thought as they resumed circling. Actually, today had begun when he awoke in the notch of a tree, a few miles outside the walls of Port Helena, where plate ivy parachutes festooned the stripped branches of a winter barren orchard. Iron Grip jabbed, then punched out with a hard right. Fibbon ducked under his opponent's arm and riposted with a backhand blow. It was blocked, and the bones of their forearms made a loud crack as they met. The Talon soldiers had shown grudging courtesy, so he rode Tycho hard until he arrived at the old prison. A fist whistled past Fibbon's ear like a cannonball. Fibbon stepped inside the outstretched arm and swiveled to plant his elbow into his enemy's exposed stomach. Staring at the abandoned room, he had known that there was very little time left.
Tycho had galloped through the deserted streets, a flower dangling from his mouth. The jab wasn't hard enough. Worse, he was too slow to duck aside as Iron Grip's arm folded fast to come around to cross his throat. And the docks had been filled with chims. They lined the wharves, the buildings, the streets, staring. A crushing constriction threatened to cut off his breath. Fibbin crouched, dropping his right foot backward between his opponent's legs. He tensed in one direction until Iron Grip counterbalanced, then Fibbin whirled and threw his weight the other way while he kicked out. Iron Grip's right leg slipped out from under him, and his own straining overbalance threw Fibbin up and over. The probationer's incredible grasp held for an astonishing instant, tearing loose only along with shreds of Fibbin's flesh. He traded his horse for a boat and headed across the bay toward the barrier buoys. Blood streamed from Fibbin's torn throat. The gash had missed his jugular vein by half an inch. He backed away when he saw how quickly Iron Grip found his feet again. It was downright intimidating how fast the Chen could move. He fought a mental battle with the buoys, earning, through reason, the right to pass through. Iron Grip bared his teeth, spread his long arms, and let out a blood-curdling shriek. The sight and sound seemed to pierce Fibbin like a memory of battles fought long, long before Chims ever flew starships, when intimidation had been half of any victory. "You can do it, Fibbin!" Robert On Eagle cried, countering Iron Grip's threat magic. "Come on, Guy! Do it for Simon!" "Shit," Fibbin thought. "Typical human trick, guilt-tripping me." Still, he managed to wipe away the momentary wave of doubt and grin back at his enemy. "Sure, you can scream, but can you do this?" Fibbin thumbed his nose. Then he had to dive aside quickly as Iron Grip charged. This time both of them landed clear blows that sounded like beaten drums. Both Chims staggered to opposite ends of the arena before managing to turn around again, panting hard and baring their teeth. The beach had been littered, and the trail up the bluffs was long and hard. But that turned out to be only the beginning. The surprised Institute officials had already started disassembling their machines when he suddenly appeared, forcing them to remain and test just one more. They assumed it would not take long to send him home again. The next time they came together, Fibbin endured several hard blows to the side of his face in order to step inside and throw his opponent to the ground. It wasn't the most elegant example of jiu-jitsu. Forcing it, he felt a sudden tearing sensation in his leg. For an instant, Iron Grip was rolling, helpless. But when Fibbin tried to pounce, his leg nearly collapsed. The probationer was on his feet again in an instant. Fibbin tried not to show a limp, but something must have betrayed him, for this time Iron Grip charged his right side. And when Fibbin tried to backpedal, the left leg gave way. Grueling tests, hostile stares, the tension of wondering if he would ever make it in time. As he fell backward, he kicked out, but all that earned him was a grip that seized his ankle like a roller press. Fibbin scrambled for leverage, but his fingers clawed in the loose soil. He tried to slip aside as his opponent hauled him back and then fell upon him. And he had gone through all of that just to arrive here? Yeah. All in all, it had been one hell of a day. There are certain tricks a wrestler can try against a stronger opponent in a much heavier weight class. Some of these came back to Fibbin as he struggled to get free. Had he been a little less close to utter exhaustion, one or two of them might even have worked. As it was, he managed to reach a point of quasi-equilibrium. He attained a small advantage of leverage, which just counterbalanced Iron Grip's horrendous strength. Their bodies strained and tugged as hands clutched, probing for the smallest opening. Their faces were pressed near the ground and close enough together to smell each other's hot breath.
The crowd had been silent for some time. No more shouts of encouragement came from one side or the other. As he and his enemy rocked gradually back and forth in a deadly serious battle of deceptive slowness, Pibin found himself with a clear view of the downward slope of the ceremonial mound. With a small corner of his awareness, he realized that the crowd was gone now. Where there had been a dense gathering of multiformed galactics now, there was only an empty stretch of trampled grass. The remnants could be seen hurrying downhill and eastward, shouting and gesticulating excitedly in a variety of tongues. Pibin caught a glimpse of the arachnoid Serentini, the Grand Examiner, standing amid a cluster of her aides, paying no attention any longer to the two Chims' fight. Even the Pila referee had turned away to face some growing tumult downslope. This, after talking as if the fate of everything in the universe depended upon a battle to the death between two Chims? That same detached part of Pibin felt insulted. Curiosity betrayed him, even here and now. He wondered, what in the world are they up to? Lifting his eyes, even an inch in an attempt to see was enough to do it. He missed by milliseconds an opening iron grip created as the probationer shifted his weight slightly. Then, as Pibin followed through too late, iron grip took advantage in a sudden slip and hold. He began applying pressure.
Pibin!
It was Galet's voice, thick with emotion. So he knew that at least somebody was still paying attention, if only to watch his final humiliation and end. Pibin fought hard. He used tricks dragged up out of the well of memory. But the best of them required strength he no longer had. Slowly he was forced back. Iron Grip grinned as he managed to lay his forearm against Fibbin's windpipe. Suddenly breath came in hard, high whistles. Air was very dear, and his struggles took on new desperation. Iron Grip held on just as urgently. His bared canines reflected bitter highlights as he panted in an open-mouthed grin over Pibin. Then the glints faded as something occulted the lights, casting a dark shadow over both of them. Iron Grip blinked, and all at once seemed to notice that something bulky had appeared next to Fibbin's head. A hairy black foot. The attached brown leg was short, as stout as a tree trunk, and led upwards to a mountain of fur. For Pibin, the world which had started to spin and go dim came slowly back into focus as the pressure on his air pipe eased somewhat. He sucked air through the constricted passage and tried to look to see why he was still alive. The first thing he saw was a pair of mild brown eyes which stared back in friendly openness from a jet-black face set at the top of a hill of muscle. The mountain also had a smile. With an arm the length of a small chimpanzee, the creature reached out and touched Pibin curiously. Iron Grip shuddered and rocked back in amazement, or maybe fear. When the creature's hand closed on Iron Grip's arm, it only squeezed hard enough to test the chim's strength. Obviously, there was no comparison. The big male gorilla chuffed, satisfied. It actually seemed to laugh. Then, using one knuckle to help it walk, it turned and rejoined the dark band that was even then trooping past the amazed rank of Chims. Galet stared in disbelief, and Utha Calding's wide eyes blinked rapidly at the sight. Robert Oneagle seemed to be talking to himself, and the Gubru gabbled and squawked. But it was Kalt who was the focus of the gorilla's attention for a long moment. Four females and three males clustered around the big Thenanin, reaching up to touch him. He responded by speaking to them, slowly, joyfully. Pibin refused to make the same mistake twice. What gorillas were doing here, he
here, atop the ceremonial mound the Gubru invaders had built, was beyond his ability to guess, and he wasn't even about to try. His concentration returned just a split instant sooner than his opponent's. When Iron Grip looked back down, the probie's eyes betrayed instantaneous dismay as he recognized the looming shape of Fibbin's fist. The small plateau was a cacophony, a mad scene devoid of any vestige of order. The boundaries of the combat arena did not seem to matter anymore, as Fibbin and his enemy rolled about under the legs of chims and gorillas and Gubru, and whatever else could walk or bounce or slither about. Hardly anybody seemed to be paying them any attention. And Fibbin did not really care. All that mattered to him was that he had a promise that he had to keep. He pummeled Iron Grip, not allowing him to regain balance until the Chen roared and, in desperation, threw Fibbin off like an old cloak. As he landed in a painful jolt, Fibbin caught a glimpse of motion behind him and turned his head to see the probationer called Weasel lifting his leg, preparing to strike down with his foot. But the blow missed as the probie was grabbed up by an affectionate gorilla who lifted him into a crushing embrace. Iron Grip's other comrade was held back by Robert Oneagle, or rather, held up. The male chim might have vastly greater strength than most humans, but it did him no good suspended in midair. Robert raised steel bar high overhead, like Hercules subduing Antaeus. The young man nodded to Fibbin.
"Watch out, old son."
Fibbin rolled aside as Iron Grip hit the ground where he had lain, sending dust plumes flying. Without delay, Fibbin leaped onto his opponent's back and slipped into a half-Nelson hold. The world spun as he seemed to ride a bucking bronco. Fibbin tasted blood, and the dust seemed to fill his lungs with clogging, searing pain. His tired arms throbbed and threatened to cramp, but when he heard his enemy's labored breathing, he knew he could stand it for a little while longer. Down, down Iron Grip's head went. Fibbin got his feet around the chin and kicked the other's legs out from under him. The probationer's solar plexus landed on Fibbin's heel, and while a flash of pain probably meant several of Fibbin's toes were broken, there was also no mistaking the whistling squeak as Iron Grip's diaphragm momentarily spasmed, stopping all flow of air. Somewhere he found the energy. In a whirl, he had his foe turned over. Gripping in a tight scissors lock, he brought his forearm around and applied the same illegal, but who cares, strangulation hold that had earlier been used on him. Bone ground against gristle. The ground beneath them seemed to throb, and the sky rumbled and growled. Alien feet shuffled on all sides, and there was the incessant squawking and chatter of a dozen jabbering tongues. Still, Fibbin listened only for the breath that did not flow through his enemy's throat, and felt only for the throbbing pulse he so desperately had to silence. That was when something seemed to explode inside his skull. It was as if something had broken open within him, spilling what seemed a brilliant light outward from his cortex. Dazzled, Fibbin first thought a probationer or a Gubru must have struck him a blow to the head from behind. But the luminance was not the sort coming from a concussion. It hurt, but not in that way. Fibbin concentrated on first priorities, holding tightly to his steadily weakening opponent. But he could not ignore this strange occurrence. His mind sought something to compare it to, but there was no correct metaphor. The soundless outburst felt somehow simultaneously alien and eerily familiar. All at once, Fibbin remembered a blue light which danced in hilarity as it fired infuriating bolts at his feet. He remembered a stink bomb that had sent a pompous, furry little diplomat scurrying off in abandoned dignity. He remembered stories told at night by the general. The connections made him suspect. All around the plateau, Galactics had ceased their multi-tongued babble and stared upslope. Fibbin would have to lift his head a bit to see what so captivated them. Before he did so, however, he made certain of his foe. When Iron Grip managed to drag in a few thin, desperate breaths, Fibbin restored just enough pressure to keep the big chin balanced on the edge of consciousness. That accomplished, he raised his eyes.
"Utha calling,"
Fibbin whispered, realizing the source of his mental confusion. The Timbrimi stood a little uphill from the others, his arms opened wide, and the cape-like folds of his formal robe flapped in the cyclone winds circling the gaping hyperspace shunt. His eyes were set far apart. Utha Calding's corona tendrils waved, and over his head something whirled. A chim moaned and pressed her palms against her temples. Somewhere a Pring's tooth mashies clattered. To many of those present, the glyph was barely detectable, but for the first time in his life, Fibbin actually kenned. And what he kenned named itself Tutsunukan. The glyph was a monster, titanic with long pent energy, the essence of delayed indeterminacy. It danced and whirled, and then without warning, it blew apart. Fibbin felt it sweep around and through him, nothing more or less than distilled, unadulterated joy. Utha Calding poured the emotion forth as if a dam had burst.
Naha esrutu anu ka hamint athaklena withtana,
he cried.
Daughter, do you send these to me and so return what I have lent you? Oh, what interest compounded and multiplied! What a fine jest to pull upon your proud parent!
His intensity affected those standing nearby. Chims blinked and stared. Robert Oneagle wiped away tears. Utha Calding turned and pointed up the trail leading toward the site of choosing. There, at the pinnacle of the ceremony mound, everyone could see that the shunt was connected at last. The deeply buried engines had done their job, and now a tunnel gaped overhead, one whose edges glistened, but whose interior contained a color emptier than blackness. It seemed to suck away light, making it difficult even to recognize that the opening was there. And yet Fibbin knew that this was a link in real time, from this place to countless others, where witnesses had gathered to observe and commemorate the evening's events.
"I hope the five galaxies are enjoying the show."
When Iron Grip showed signs of reviving, Fibbin gave the probe a whack to the side of the head and looked up again. Halfway up the narrow trail leading to the pinnacle, there stood three ill-matched figures. The first was a small neo-chimpanzee whose arms seemed too long and whose ill-formed legs were bowed and short. Jojo held on to one hand of Kalt, the huge Thenodin ambassador. Kalt's other massive paw was grasped by a tiny human girl, whose blonde hair flapped like a bright banner in the whirling breeze. Together, the unlikely trio watched the pinnacle itself, where an unusual band had gathered. A dozen gorillas, males and females, stood in a circle directly under the half-invisible hole in space. They rocked back and forth, staring up into the yawning emptiness overhead, and crooned a low atonal melody.
"I believe,"
said the awed Serentini Grand Examiner of the Uplift Institute,
"I believe this has happened before, once or twice, but not in more than 1,000 eons."
Another voice muttered, this time in gruff, emotion-drenched Anglic.
It's no fair. This was supposed to be our time.
Fibbon saw tears streaming down the cheeks of several of the Chims. Some held each other and sobbed. Galet's eyes welled also, but Fibbon could tell that she saw what the others did not. Hers were tears of relief, of joy. From all sides there were heard other expressions of amazement.
"But what sort of creatures, entities, beings can they be?"
one of the Gubru suzerains asked.
"Presentience,"
another voice answered in Galactic 3. "They passed through all the test stations, so they had to be ready for a stage ceremony of some sort," mumbled Cordwainer Appleby.
"But how in the world did Goril—"
Robert Oneagle interrupted his fellow human with an upraised hand.
"Don't use that old name anymore. Those, my friend, are Garthlings."
Ionization filled the air with the smell of lightning. Uther Calding chanted his pleasure at the symmetry of this magnificent surprise, this great jest, and in his Timbrimi voice it was a rich, unearthly sound. Caught up in the moment, Fibbon did not even notice climbing to his feet, standing to get a better view. Along with everyone else, he saw the coalescence that took place above the giant apes, humming and swaying on the hilltop. Over the gorillas' heads, a milkiness swirled and began to thicken with the promise of shapes.
"In the memory of no living race has this happened,"
the Grand Examiner said in awe.
"Client races have had countless uplift ceremonies over the last billion years. They have graduated levels and chosen uplift consorts to assist them. A few have even used the occasion to request an end of uplift, to return to what they had been before."
The filminess assumed an oval outline, and within, dark forms grew more distinct, as if emerging slowly from a deep fog.
"But only in the ancient sagas has it been told of a new species coming forth of its own will, surprising all galactic society and demanding the right to select its own patrons."
Fibbon heard a moan and looked down to see Iron Grip beginning to rise, trembling to his elbows. A cruor of blood-tinted dust covered the battered chin from face to foot.
"Gotta hand it to him. He's got stamina."
But then Fibbon did not imagine he himself looked a whole lot better. He raised his foot. It would be so easy. He glanced aside and saw Galet watching him. Iron Grip rolled over onto his back. He looked up at Fibbon in blank resignation.
"Aw, hell."
Instead, he reached down and offered his hand to his former foe.
"I don't know what we were fighting over. Somebody else got the brass ring, anyway."
A moan of surprise rippled through the crowd. From the Gubru came grating wails of dismay. Fibbon finished hauling Iron Grip to his feet, got him stable, then looked up to see what the gorillas had wrought to cause such consternation. It was the face of a Thenanin. Giant, clear as anything, the image hovering in the focus of the hyperspace shunt looked enough like Kalt to be his brother.
"Such a sober, serious, earnest expression," Fibbon thought.
"So typically Thenanin." A few of the assembled Galactics chattered in amazement, but most acted as if they had been frozen in place, all except Uther Calding, whose delighted astonishment still sparked in all directions like a Roman candle.
"Zwertin's daughter! I worked for this, and never knew."
The titanic image of the Thenanin drifted backward in the milky oval. All could see the thick, slitted neck, and then
the creature's powerful torso. But when its arms came into view, it became clear that two figures stood on either side of it, holding its hands.
"Duly noted,"
the Grand Examiner said to her aides.
"The unnamed Stage 1 client species, tentatively called Garthlings, have selected as their patrons the Thenanin, and as their consorts and protectors, they have jointly chosen the Neo-Chimpanzees and humans of Earth."
Robert On Eagle shouted. Cordwainer Appleby fell to his knees in shock. The sound of renewed Gubru screeching was quite deafening. Bibbon felt a hand slip into his. Galet looked up at him, the poignancy in her eyes now mixed with pride.
"Oh, well," he sighed. "They wouldn't have let us keep him anyway. At least, this way we get visitation rights. And I hear the Thenanin aren't too bad as E.T.'s go."
She shook her head.
"You knew something about these creatures and didn't tell me?"
He shrugged.
"It was supposed to be a secret. You were busy. I didn't want to bother you with unimportant details. I forgot. Mea culpa. Don't hit, please."
Briefly, her eyes seemed to flash. Then she, too, sighed and looked back up the hill.
"It won't take them long to realize these aren't really Garthlings, but creatures of Earth."
"What'll happen then?"
It was her turn to shrug.
"Nothing, I guess. Wherever they come from, they're obviously ready for uplift. Humans signed a treaty, unfair as it was, forbidding Earth Clan to raise them, so I guess this'll stand. Fait accompli. At least we can play a role, help see the job's done right."
Already the rumbling beneath their feet had begun to diminish. Nearby, the cacophony of Gubru squawking rose in strident tones to replace it. But the Grand Examiner appeared unmoved. Already she was busy with her assistants, ordering records gathered, detailing follow-up tests to be made, and dictating urgent messages to Institute headquarters.
"And we must help Kalt inform his clan,"
she added.
"They will no doubt be surprised at this news."
Bibbon saw the suzerain of Beam and Talon stalk off to a nearby Gubru flyer and depart at top speed. The boom of displaced air ruffled the feathers of the avians who remained behind. It happened then that Bibbon's gaze met that of the suzerain of Propriety, staring down from its lonely perch. The alien stood more erect now. It ignored the babbling of its fellows and watched Bibbon with a steady, unblinking, yellow eye. Bibbon bowed. After a moment, the alien politely inclined its head in return. Above the pinnacle and the crooning gorillas, now officially the youngest citizens of the civilization of the five galaxies, the opalescent oval shrank back into the narrowing funnel. It diminished, but not before those present were treated to yet one more sight none had ever seen before, one they were not likely ever to see again. Up there in the sky, the image of the Thenanin and those of the Chim and human all looked at each other. Then the Thenanin's head rocked back, and he actually laughed. Richly, deeply, sharing hilarity with its diminutive partners, the leathery figure chortled. It roared. Among the stunned onlookers, only Uther Calding and Robert Oneagle felt like joining in, as the ghostly creature above did what Thenanin were never known to do. The image kept right on laughing, even as it faded back, back, to be swallowed up at last by the closing hole in space and covered by the returning stars.